is the beverage of the people. It always has been, right? Like, it's beer. At the heart of beer is cheerfulness and fellowship and convivialism. Like, so that's in whatever, and I'm excited to hear about it, but whatever this is that you've concocted, it's in the spirit of beer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what you boys are drinking.
Yeah. Mostly
Bergeron,
to be honest with you.
All right, everybody, welcome into another episode of the Brews and Bruins podcast. This is season 4, episode 22, I'm pretty sure.
Probably.
I'm like 90% sure about that. We looked before this, but it's all right. My name is Cam Hasbrook, joined as per usual by Drew Johnson. We are a The Hockey Podcast Network podcast presented by Bruins Diehards and Pride Diehards and sponsored by DraftKings. We've got a special one for you on tap here tonight. We are down at the beautiful Bissell Brothers Brewing Company here in Portland, Maine on Thompson's Point. Right here in the Brickyard, joined by the one and only Peter Bissell. How you doing, man?
Oh, good. Thanks for coming down. Happy to be here. Happy to have you guys in the building. Let's go.
Yeah, we could not be more excited, man. I mean, we've talked about, especially coming here, because as we'll get to, this is genuinely one of my favorite places to come in Portland.
Oh, thank
as
you so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
I also love
your
merch.
He's had that hat for a while, even before. Yeah. We started talking.
This isn't just sucking up, so. Yeah. it's been excellent, and you know, we'll get into some brewery stuff here in a sec. But first of all, for people who don't know you and maybe aren't local, do you want to kind of give us a little bit of a background about you and about kind of what led you to start the brewing company in the first place?
Sure, absolutely, be happy to. So we are actually in our 10th year of operation. We will officially turn 10 in December of 2023. So it's kind of taking it all in and kind of looking at where we've come from and where we're going. And we've got a bunch of cool stuff begin to take shape throughout the year, which I'm sure will cumulate in some big actual like proper party. But we've got other stuff lined up. We've got a big subby variant week that's in planning, where we're going to release a lot of riffs on subby. That should be sometime this spring. And then the last time we really celebrated was for our 4th anniversary, and we flew one of our favorite bands, Tokyo Police Club, in and partied at Aura. Those types of festivities will, I'm sure, take shape. But looking back over 10 years, once upon a time, I was a photographer and graphic designer. I still am, just for this company. I have a lot of help now. That's for sure. But I was kind of doing that, sort of living the freelance solopreneur life. My studio is down on Exchange Street, and my wife and I were living downtown. Well, I guess she wasn't my wife then. The years keep coming.
Belated congratulations.
Thanks. And so I was in this kind of like marketing and graphic design world and learning how to promote myself and my work, and kind of already in the trenches. I'm older than my brother. So my brother was still in school at Farmington, and he was homebrewing a lot. He actually he came to live with me the previous summer and lived in the house with me and all my friends. And we were all in restaurant work, and worked at a restaurant called Great Diamond Island out in Casco Bay. That's actually where I met my wife. And it was like, you know, a summer movie type thing.
Yeah.
You'd get off the boat with like $400 cash in your pocket and just it'd all be gone.
Yeah. It was so much fun. The boat with that. Yeah.
It was great. It was so much fun. But my brother during this time was homebrewing a lot. And like he was 19 at the time. So we were like buying him beer. And my roommates were like, what the fuck is this kid doing? Like, our kitchen was just like a mess of a laboratory with these stovetop homebrews. And, Allagash White was really formative for him at the time, and just kind of being not yet being able to go to breweries. Well, we'll get to that, because, you know, we were kind of part of that taproom revolution and that sort of on-premise switch. But the seed was sown in right around Thanksgiving 2011. So we were into beer. He got me into craft beer. I mean, I was always sort of into it in college, but he really kind of got me into it. And he hit me up and he's like, look, like I want to do this. I want to brew beer, but we should do this together. We should start our own thing. Like, I don't want to work for someone else. And at the time, my sort of career was like really like going where I wanted it to go. I was getting the gigs I wanted to get. I was commanding the price I wanted to get. I was doing interesting work, and I was fulfilled at the time. But I really it real like something about it kind of sparked. Look at this, the Habs.
Oh yeah, we got the
we got the Habs
and Bruins on right now.
They suck so bad right now. I feel bad. They're a legendary team, but
yeah, no, it's like
Hopefully this goes the way I think it's going to go. But it sparked something in me because I saw the potential for this to grow into more than just like, because the work I was doing, it was limited to like the hours in the day. Like it was the work that I could produce at the time.
Yeah.
And I saw even then, you know, we really did not know what we were getting into, but I saw the potential for this to grow into something bigger than the two of us. So that was when the seed was sown, was like around Thanksgiving break 2011. So it took us. I'm actually going to get a drink myself.
What I'm hearing is that you saw the Bruins win the cup, and you were like, "All right, we're going for goals here."
Like, well, yeah, it's funny. I was watching that. My wife, around then, was getting her master's in London, and we were together. We weren't married. We were together, so we did the long distance for like 9 months. It was great. I spent a lot of time in London. Absolutely loved London.
Yeah, nice.
But she came back, and I didn't know exactly when she was going to come back. And she came into my apartment at the time, and we were watching the final that year. So it was funny. She burst into us watching the final. Again, that feels like yesterday. About due for another one. Yeah. About due for another one. We'll get to that, though.
Feels like we've been due a couple of times.
So it took us 2 years from, like, that inception of, like, okay, this is what we want to do. It took us about 2 years, almost to the... Well, I shouldn't say about. It was almost 2 years to the day before we poured beer in December 7th of 2013. And those 2 years were really formative. I learned more in those 2 years than I ever did in school. Yeah. Like, it was... Even at the relatively small scale that we started at, I'm getting ahead of myself. It was a crash course. It was a lot of fear. It was bigger than anything I had attempted. You know, we're from a small town up north. Like, we weren't, you know, this was a very big league shit for us at that time.
Yeah.
And we... But he had this recipe, you know, that he kept refining the substance, and you know, I was building this brand, and we were just, you know, it felt right, you know, like it was hard, and there were setbacks, and again, that we're starting from scratch. It wasn't like our parents were industrialists or anything. Yeah. Like, you know, we were really starting from base, and but we learned that. I look back at those 2 years as some of the most formative of my life. And we launched with the substance, which still doesn't taste like any beer that I can name. But at the time, there was nothing. It was in a world by itself.
Yeah.
And the beer got refined over the years. But we launched with that. And immediate demand. And so we had our hands full from the get-go. And then in the spring of the following year, we got the taproom open. So I don't know. You guys probably... never made it out to the original spot, right?
Yeah,
so
this is a few years.
A brewery incubator area right across the street from Allagash. It's called One Industrial Way. It's still, the legend lives on. It's still, you got Foundation,
yeah,
which opened
right
around
right
when
there,
us.
Right? Yeah.
Foundation opened right around when we did, and Austin Street opened on the backside of the building.
Yeah.
It was one of these light industrial buildings that so many breweries start in, not just in Maine, but all over. And, there were these two little, I mean, like the two little front rooms, because these buildings were designed for like auto mechanics and things like that. So there was always like a little front office room. I swear to God, it was no bigger than this area that we're sitting in right now. But we went through the wall, and those two front rooms became the tasting room. So that was a little bit of an afterthought after just getting the brewing production up.
Mm-hmm.
But the canning machine came in February of that year, and that was a whole other... The can was the other thing. So Marshall Wharf was a brewery. It's now closed, but they were the only ones that put out 16-ounce cans in Maine at
the
time. Yeah.
That's crazy to think of.
And it was like a really cool start.
Yeah.
They were like, they were up in Belfast. I was really inspired by them. They were very raw and gritty. David, the founder, like I really liked him and was inspired by him. And the beers were uncompromising. They were big. The one beer called Cant Dog. It was like some railway terminology or like logging terminology, but it was big. It was like 8%, mega hop bomb, and you couldn't really get the can. You know, like you, they were a very small batch, and they come into beer cellar every now and then, and so. And that, and obviously, like, Heady Topper, you know, like, we had felt the mystique of these. So 16-ounce cans were the way to go as far as we were concerned. It's what is the package that we wanted the beer to be in. And all we could afford was this. It was from the same company that we still use called Wild Goose. And it was like a two-head filler, and it was manual. You took two cans, and you triggered the CO2 purge, and it filled. And then you put it in one by one into this seamer with the lid on it. And it sounds simple, but that was a whole other crash course in temperature and pressure and carbonation, which we knew so little about. Yeah. You know, we were trying to package the beer way too warm, and we really wanted it to be effervescent. We wanted you to be able to smell the hops like around here, so we were carbing the fuck out of it, which just led to breakout. And but that was another, it was a painful process, but we knew, like, we had this thing, and it was felt really great to hold the can, and that primed you for the taste that was coming after. So we always knew that we were on the right path. And I looking back, I wouldn't change a thing. We did everything ourselves to the extent that we could, and took it one step at a time. But so we get this tap room open, and we made it our own. Like, I know graffiti artists, and my boy Brett came in and, like, put up this crazy art all through the brewery that, like, it's like, this is totally unique. And that to me was always really important. Like, this, we can't be copying anyone else. You get inspired by other things, but you can't just rip anything. Yeah, so it's like, this is all ours. And we got the tap room open. We had a janky green refrigerator that we spray painted. Only thing on tap was Substance. You know, we did the draft system ourselves. Yeah. And the only beer that we were making was Substance. And then the people started coming. And fuck, I mean, like, at the time, to get 30 or 40 cases of properly packaged beer took, like, all day.
Yeah.
just due to the slowness of what we were working with, but also our greenness and, like, a lot of short fills. And but this beer would just vanish, and people started lining up. And it was exciting, and it was, like, validating, but it was also, like, it kept the pressure going. It was like, fuck, we have to. If there's a line in front of this place on a Thursday, like, we got to deliver. We got to deliver what they want, and, like, not fuck it up. And, you know, we had started just with wholesaling the keg, so that the bars in town, there was a huge demand there, and we didn't fucking have enough beer. And out of the gate, these are the, and you know, we kept hearing the same thing over and over. Oh, these are good problems, and they were, but it was a problem still. Yeah, so,
good problems are still problems that need to be addressed at some point, especially from a business perspective.
So we started with two units out there that were connected. Main Beer Company had previously been there, but they vacated, and we kind of worked with them, and we bought some of their existing equipment that was in place, like their chiller and whatnot was hooked up and good to go. So again, you would not believe how little we knew about the equipment at the time. It was so, like, when the equipment started dropping, it was very nerve-wracking.
That inspires me, because I bought one of those homebrew kits, and I was like, oh, this is going to be pretty easy. And then I started reading through the directions. I was like, oh my God, that's so much. And that was for, like, the fucking, like, Amazon one. Yeah. So, like, I can't even imagine.
Yeah,
but it's good to know that I was
beer and brewing to a pro as well. It's very democratic, because you can't really cut any corners.
Yeah.
You know, brewing on the stovetop. There, you can grab efficiencies, and now here we lean into that. You know, if we can get half an hour or 20 minutes off a brew cycle, that's huge as it compounds over the year. But by and large, the process takes the same amount of time. So any great beer recipe, it's a test to any great beer recipe that has been done by its maker so many times.
Yeah.
And it's taken hundreds and thousands of hours to get to where it is, you know. And it is really a testament to brewers. And I'm not a brewer. You know, I'm talking about my brother and his ilk. People like that, if you have a beer recipe that you love, boy, you can't imagine the tens of thousands of hours that have gone into making it good like that. So that period was a lot of fun, and it was new, and you know, people were coming out, and we were running out of beer, and that did, you know, we never tried to orchestrate that or fabricate sort of the demand, but it was just, okay, like the brand and the distinctness and the newness of the taste put us in this predicament where for 9 months, Baby Genius was our second beer, and we didn't fuck with that for 10 months.
Yeah.
Until we're like, okay, like, everyone needs to, like, we need something new. But we spent all that time just trying to refine the process of both brewing and packaging and distribution. There was like mm-hmm. five of us doing all this.
Yeah.
First, it was just three, then four, then five, you know, like sooner or later, like we started, you know, if you were a buddy and came out there to help out, you'd get stuck there. You know, like they all ended up worrying. Most of them are still here.
That's awesome.
But the big crescendo was in the summer of 2015. That was when, by now we were making a few, we only had a few beers at any given time, but that was when I think like that tasting room culture really like crescendoed, because us, Foundation, Austin Street, we were all open by that time. And going into that summer, that's how, it's a story for another day, but that's how I got roped into High Roller, is how I met those guys, because I'm a partner in that business too. And they were just starting, but we lined it up five food vendors. That was like the food truck sort of wave too, coincided with this, because these crowds were out there. It was like, all right, we need food of some kind. Like, we need this fucking, and thankfully the landlord loved all of it, because it was like this late industrial like parking lot was a fucking party every Saturday. So we had food. We lined up food. So that summer it was a different food truck of the five that we work with every day. We were only open 5 days of a week at the time, and kind of standing back and looking at this like, shit, this is crazy. We were selling at the time, it was 90% of the beer was being sold on premise. We were making more at the time. We were able to get more tanks in, but as quickly as like the initial wave of insanity to get to that point had subsided, I realized like we ended up with three connected units, two on the front and one in the back, and then a separate unit in the same building but not connected at the other end of the building. And that was where we put all the cans, because that's something that a lot of people don't tend to think about. It's like those cans come by the truckload. You need to have a place to put them. You can't just order like a few cases worth. Like, they come in a fucking tractor trailer, and that shit needs to go somewhere. And it's a lot of floor space. So we were lucky that we had what we needed, but we were done. And the demand was like through the roof, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't trying to, you know, fly too close to the sun or like bite off more than we can chew, but it was like, okay, we need to grow. So I got connected with the Thompson's Point guys very serendipitously, and I came down here, and I was like, in my mind, I wanted to rest. I was like, the previous 3 years had taken a lot out of me, but this, it was like, all right, we can't stop now. So I came down here again. This is like early 2015. Came down here, this whole building. And I had lived in Portland for a long time at the time, and this whole area was just like a wasteland. I never knew what it was. I glanced at it occasionally from the highway. But
train stations here.
That's really all.
And it's funny that the train station's there, because this whole campus, at the turn of the century, like the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, this was like the hub of the main central railway. Mm-hmm. And in an era where like trains were still used for passengers and freight way more than they are now. So this was like the hub of the biggest railway in Maine. This was a rail car repair building. So I toured it. The whole building was open. There was none of this. It was just like a shithole. But the brick was nice. It was a 100-year-old building. Or it was built in like 1903, so over 100 years old. And all the original beams, like that beam's 1903. All the big beams out there, it's all 1903.
That's kind of awesome.
That's sick. Yeah.
I could see, I was like, boy, this could be cool. And we took a gamble, and that was a whole other designing this. And but it, you know what? They delivered. We got the whole thing. And then the other thing that was like, okay, we need to, as small as it was, this is a manufacturing operation. We have to disconnect all this shit and move it, you know, and go offline. And it was scary.
Yeah.
Because we were doing well, but it was still a smaller business. So, like, that interruption in cash flow, I was like, fuck, when is this shit going to stop?
Yeah.
But it all came to pass, and it all went relatively smoothly. We got the building delivered exactly on the day that we were promised it, which is unheard of nowadays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good old days of 2016.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So we opened here in June of 2016, and we had space. It was just this building. We've had that building built since, but it was awesome to be able to accommodate way more people and more tanks. And by this time, we had a portfolio. You know, Swish, you know, probably our most popular and famous beer apart from Substance. had been released. You know, there was Swish Mania out at Industrial Way in the, at the end of our time there, and that carried over down here. And we rocked. It was still, like, lines every day. It was still, you know, that subsided as the industry has kind of matured, or at least this latest iteration of the industry has matured. But for the first couple of years down here, it was still, like, batshit every day, lines out the door. And the next kind of stage of evolution was in 2000, we upgraded the brew house. So we went from 10 barrel to 20 barrel. You guys know the industry a little bit. You understand, like, the efficiencies, right? Like, okay, now we're making double the beer. Yeah. And this, yeah, so, but we had this kit. We had this, our original 10-barrel kit. And I, my brother's kind of end goal was to get into mixed fermentation and sour, you know, farmhouse ales.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of different adjectives that mean different things. But, yeah. but also, we kind of really wanted to do something. I think our first instinct is always do something different, not try to, like, one out. You can, better is subjective, right? It's not, it's hard to quantify better, but it's not hard to quantify different. So it's always been important to us to, like, do our own thing and make sure that it's us and pouring us into it. And when I say us, I mean everybody at the company, because we take in, everyone shapes the trajectory of it. And, but Noah went to Florida with my parents. They do Florida, like, every April, and I, for whatever reason, couldn't go that year. I was doing our own thing, and but he came back, and I was already thinking about the move and the fact that we'd have this brew house, because the new brew house, I should mention, was, like, being built to coincide with the move down here. So our hometown of Milo, way up north, nothing going on, but there's something special about it. I feel like everyone has, there's something special about your hometown. We're like, let's open in Milo. It's wild. It made no sense. But I was thinking about that. Then he came home from Florida and he was like, yo, the 10 barrel, we should do something in Milo. And I was like, dude, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Hell yeah.
So that was a surreal. That was the next kind of arc, was to shop for a property in Milo. And the cool thing about doing something this batshit is, like, up there, built, like, stuff is sold for a song. Compared to
Sure.
So there was this former, when we were growing up, it was a snowmobile service station and dealership located on the International Snow Sled Trail up there, which goes all the way to Canada. And our family didn't really do that, but it was always like a marker to me, like, driving to Bangor was like the city up there. It was like 30, 40 minutes away. And, like, when it was time to go to Walmart or whatever, like, there was none of that in Milo really. So, like, going to the city meant going to Bangor. Mm-hmm. And coming home, you know, being a boy, my head on the window, I would see that Arctic Cat sign and, like, know that we were coming into Milo. So it was surreal. I had never been in the building when we toured it to buy it. And I was like, this is insane. But we got the building, and then the Milo arc, Bissell Brothers Three Rivers, that began with the building purchase in March 2017. And that opened the following summer. Following, like, July, we opened that. And it was the right thing to do. Our mother in that time had passed. Mm-hmm. So it was like, we're bringing this back. We're going to tell the Bissell story. And it did serve some financial purposes, because, you know, the primary production up there, we sell everything that we make here. It's a full tap room. It's very cool. If you're ever in the area, I would strongly encourage
it.
It's very fun.
The space here is incredible.
We have a huge beer garden. We have a 1920s caboose as part of the beer garden. Ryan Adams spray painted the inside. It's you can do things up there that you can't here. There's no red tape to speak of. We have our concerts up there. Like, we have our own stage. Like, it's you can do whatever you want. So, but it does serve some sort of financial ends, because, you know, we're paying Portland rent down here and it all works. But for so many of the beers that we make there, you know, these beers, 9-12 months in oak, easy, you know, if not more. And I didn't really want to, like, pay rent for the beer to age, because the beer's made up there. One of the primary ingredients is time. Mm-hmm. So to own the building up there outright, and, like, it's the beer can take all the time it needs in this area. It's a slower pace of life. There's less, and we sell Swish. You know, everything that's made here, as I said, it's up there. But the beer produced up there takes time, and we've got nothing but it up there. So Then we acquired the house. The cool thing about Milo is if you need something, you just talk about it loudly at the pub, which is a Pat's Pizza. So I was there, and I wanted to do, you know, the town, the history of the town is built on the backs of the railroad. You know, the middle school mascot's the railroaders. Everyone's grandparents work for the railroad. It's a big part of the culture up there. So I was like, man, like we need to send this up some way. So I, we're located right across the Sebec River from the Derby Shops, which in the heyday was literally one of the biggest rail yards in the Northeast. It was a major transportation and commerce hub for rail cargo going between Canada and the eastern coast of the United States. And there are all these old cars over there, like passenger cars from like the 50s and 60s. I was like, I went in them. You can go in them. And we talked to the people. And I'd like to get one of these over here. It would take a lot of work to refurb the inside. But I was talking about this shit loudly at Pat's Pizza. And then someone comes out of the woodwork. A realtor I had known. But her and her husband were rail buffs, I guess. And they had a couple cabooses on tracks on their property. And that's how that shit goes out there.
That's crazy,
so, we had them moved. With the same company that does our rigging for our tanks here, Cody Crane out of Lewiston. And we got this nice caboose on the property. The same thing with the house. We, in those days, I mean, we have a staff up there now, but for some of the specialized brewing that goes on there, it's less like regimented than down here.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of the beer. Like here, everything's on a tight schedule. Everyone knows down to the hour how long ferments take with our ales down here and our hoppy stuff. But up there, it was like, okay, no one might need like 3 or 4 people to help with like a big series of transfers and barrel work and brewing for like 3 days, but once every like 3-4 weeks. So we'd bring people from up here. That was where like the Milo time, like that's an inside joke here, meant going up, doing work, and then drinking around the fire at the Red House. Well, first we were like crashing at my father's house on the couch, and he was all fine with it, but after a while I was like, we're a company, like we can't be asking employees to just sleep on the floor of our parents' house when we come up here. So I knew we needed a house in town. Again, easy. But talked loudly. This dude, Barry, who lived in this house right there, another house that I'm familiar with. It's like on the property. Sorry to describe it's pretty much on the brewery. It's right there. It all looks like it's one compound. But growing up, this house is where our logs got delivered for firewood. And it's Spartan looking back on it, but like my father would order the wood, however many cord, full logs like this big around. So he'd chainsaw them up out there, and my brother and I would have to like suplex these huge cross sections into the truck, drive it an hour, like a mile across town to dad's house, unload them, and then in the spring we'd rent the splitter, cut them up, and then load them up in the truck again and drive it back around to the woodshed, stack them. And then in the winter, fucking get them and then put them through this arcane like setup that we had to get the wood into the basement. We touched this wood like 10 times before it went into the... And growing up, I was like, man, like we didn't have a lot, but like I'll bet we could have just paid for whatever the heating system was at the time. Like, come on, like we touched the wood so many times. So it was this house that we ended up buying, and that's like everyone just calls it the Red House now. So that's where people stay. Like if you know we have a concert up there, if the Mallets or Spohs are playing and I'm up there, like we all stay and party at the Red House. So we've got a little compound up there, and then meanwhile back here, you know, now we're in like 2019, I'm looking at food. We've had a few food partners, and it worked, but again, like I'm driven by hospitality and the on-premise experience, and I really, the laws had changed too at the time. So COVID unfortunately forced out locally sourced our friends that were operating the kitchen at the time. Happy ending, they're in Yarmouth, they're closer to their home. They have a berry farm, that's where my brother got married, up in New Gloucester, Pownall rather. So they have their own restaurant up there now, and we took the kitchen over in COVID. So we opened the kitchen in May 2021. Again, it's not just an afterthought. It's a very focused. We have some really phenomenal people in there making really great food. So that was, it goes hand in hand. And I'm calling it now. I'm already seeing this, but like this is going to be the next wave. Like food trucks are great, but in terms of on-premise brewery hospitality, more and more places are going to be taking over their own food and trying to make their own mark with that. So that was kind of the most recent pivot here. But I, as I say that, it's like we've leaned so far into our barrel program. We have employees whose sole dedication is blending and tasting barrel-aged beer. Our lab, which is right above our heads right now, has done tremendous things for our QC and our shelf stability just to make sure that the beer is bright and effervescent and tastes the same every time while constantly, very subtly getting better and better. And then we have this other building built for all the cans, our actual proper offices, the podcast studio, our media studio, and that's kind of where we're at now. And the next thing is the space adjacent, like where you guys walked in. It was previously Rosemont. Before that, it was a winery called Cellar Door. We're taking that, and we're going to do an event space in there. Oh, it's a beautiful bar in there. We're going to expand the kitchen. We're going to very likely take over bread baking and lean into baking element, but also be able to do large-scale private events in there. It's a beautiful bar. It's connected. There's been a lot of talk over the last few years, like, oh, like, what's the next location? And in my mind, it's like, well, yeah, like, but who's going to do it? You know, like, I can't really just, like, go relocate to Sugarloaf for 3 months to launch a new tavern.
Yeah, yeah. Still a small.
Yeah. And everyone's, like, we would have found a way to do that, but if that was just one example. You know, we were looking at the mountains, but because on-premise is great. That's for a business, like, it's... It's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
But this has solved that problem. So we get hit up for private events all the time. And we rent the mezzanine during the week. But that's like 35 people. It's great. It's great for what it is. And the stairs are kind of an impediment. You know, you want to ease of access. So now we've got this big room that we can event. You know, it'll take probably a good part of this year to get to its final form. But it's...
Guess we got to throw a party or something.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome, though. But, I do like the idea of sitting up on the mezzanine and just broadcasting the below. But it's all right. We can make it work on one floor.
But, I was talking to you guys about, like, the hockey tournaments that we're involved with. And, you know, my men's league team, Team Bissell Brothers and Team High Roller. We have multiple jerseys now, but we really try to encourage employees, you know, like making their mark and leaning into their, you know, like incorporating their personalities into the business. And I'd like to think there's a lot of that, you know, like most of our events or points of interest, you know, like a bunch of the guys out front are Spurs supporters in the English Premier League.
I know, I saw that, so but then I also Spurs know you're a United guy, right?
So yeah, yeah,
like,
my wife's
Spurs scarf when I walked in, and I was like, there's something going on.
I kind of have to be United. I support it all. I love it. But, like, my wife's family's British, from Manchester. Yeah, she has a family member that played for United in the 60s. So I got it. That's my team. Bowling, you know, there's a big outdoor snowboarding component. You know, I kind of lead the charge with the hockey component. You know, our goalie is out there working. Our operations manager is a great player. I just broke with him. I went home to just take a quick break before coming back to meet you guys. So really try to, you know, we make beer and we make food and we make experiences, but to really be unique, you know, we really try to be open to individual employee interests and to, like, foster that whenever we can. We've got beer making programs, the You Earned It series, where staff from any department can come with, hey, I would like to try a cucumber lager, you know, and it gives them a chance to work with marketing and designing the can label. It gives them a chance to work with, like, our wellness and philanthropy wing to, like, every You Earned It beer benefits a charity of the brewer's choice. So they get to donate back into the community to a cause that is important to them. They obviously get to a taste for beer production and the making of the beer. And we encourage that. And we've had some great beers come out of the last few years through that program. It's and, you know, with the restaurant now, you know, we're collaborating. We get to do, I mean, like, this Feast of the Seven Fishes was table service event around the holidays. Unbelievable menu of fresh local seafood. Kolsch Day, that's coming right up. That's going to be early April.
I'll be at that one.
It's so fun, dude. So
I love a Kolsch.
Based off traditional Kolsch service in Cologne, Germany, which, if you're not aware, is they're served in, like, 8-ounce cylindrical glasses like this. And the waiters walk around with these things called kranzes or Kolsch wreaths, and there's like 30 of them full. So we'd go into a drinking hall in Cologne, yeah, and no words are said. We sit down, the beer's put in front of you, and they all have coasters, and they keep tabs on the coaster
of how many.
And if you get halfway down, they're just gonna drop another one. They're like a euro each, you know, like. Yeah. And they make another one, and they just keep going until you put the coaster on top of your glass, and then they bring a wireless POS and cash you out. No words are ever exchanged. Wow. So it's like, I mean, like my brother, father, and I, when we were in Cologne, had like 30 pours. You know, like it's crazy.
As you should.
Yeah, yeah. It's and with the kitchen now, we're able to do something like that, and then have an all German beer or food menu to go with it.
Oh,
so,
my God, I will so be. I might live here for that.
Yeah, so I would highly recommend coming to that. It was so fun last year. It was a boisterous drinking hall out there. It was so fun. At this point, you know, we're just working to get better at everything that we do, which is that's going to take the rest of my working days, the rest of everyone's working days, if we stick with it. And it's just fun to kind of see where that goes and where it progresses. So I will say, to get on the record, talking about football and the English tier system, my wife just finished the show Welcome to Wrexham.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm telling you, boys, it is making me want to buy the Maine Mariners.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this in a few
years. USL, the Portland team that they've been talking about.
Okay, yep. So Gabe's a friend. Yeah. Gabe's a friend. I actually need to reconnect with him because, again, COVID did everything kind of push that back a little bit, and but we are in cahoots with him to do something nothing solid, but I would love to see a Bissell Beer Garden over there. I want to see the team take shape and first and foremost, but that has some good momentum behind it. He brought some merch in the Forest City.
Oh my God, it's beautiful!
Scarf.
I know,
so it's sick. So awesome. It would be amazing if that came to fruition. I think it'd be really good for them.
Well, any proper football stadium's got to have beer, what better than beer? So
I do have a question before we continue, because we usually do beer reviews at the top of the show.
Absolutely.
I know we're going to get down to these. You got to tell us a little bit about what we're drinking.
Tell us a little bit while we're drinking, and then we'll give it our old review. And I don't know if you know the scale that we do, or we can just reveal it later.
I looked into it a little bit after you guys tagged me in something, and I was just like,
absolutely.
I was reading it in the voice of Michael Scott.
Yeah, that's exactly how it's meant to be done.
How's your Polsky to Kowalski scale? Like, what's that? Okay.
We have drinkability. And we have tasteability, neither of which are based on quality. It's purely based on how much you can drink of it, how easy it is to drink, and how easy it is to taste.
I like that because beer is subjective, not just to the individual, but to the environment that you're drinking it in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we reviewed the same beer a million times.
We reviewed Miller
Lite
like a bunch.
Yeah.
it depends on so many factors. You know, if the tap line's dirty. And again, like, we're not beer snobs. Yeah. My brother in the summer, you go up to Milo, that bay door's open, and that boy is slamming Bud Light wine.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but brewers, you might be surprised to know, craft brewers look to macro a lot because you drink a Budweiser out of a can, it's going to taste the exact same around the planet. And that is a tremendous achievement. So there's a lot of things that, you know, smaller brewers look to in macro ales that have achieved crazy scale.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that. And at the Garden last Saturday, where there's four of us, we're going up, and someone gets the first round. Nate gets the first round. It's Corona on tap. And we're going up to the seat, and on the escalator, I'm looking back at Trev, and I'm like, this tastes so, this tastes like, there's a chemo, someone didn't, like, clean the lines out, like, this is fucking gross, like, and all the boys were like, wait a minute, like,
this is not right,
we fucking dumped that shit, whatever, you know, it was an L, obviously a round there is like 50 bucks,
like,
but,
both of your limbs or whatever,
we went to Sky Bar, and I was like, I want a good Corona after that shit, so they had stovepipes, and out of the can, ice cold, I was like, yes, this is good, but the point that I'm getting away from is, beer depends on, you can have a beer that you wouldn't like in one setting, and then in a different setting, it is like exactly
that is so true. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan usually of like porters, like really heavy or dark beers. And my buddy handed one the other day, and we were having like this beautiful Italian spread of like homemade sauce and stuffed shells and stuff.
Yeah,
he's like, try this, and I was like, I'm usually not. I took a sip, I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
And it was like that style that I don't normally grab. Maybe it was just the beer, or maybe I don't know what it was. Yeah. But like, I feel like that's situational.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It really does matter, right?
I'm glad to hear that our rating system is actually like stamp of approval now, because we just thought it was,
I know, we're going to have to put this like official approved on the Bergeron scale, yeah.
Two things can be true at once. And I really think this embodies the way most people around Bissell Brothers feel. Like, we take our jobs really seriously. You know, we really are trying to make this beer better and better with time. We take it very seriously. But that doesn't mean you need to take yourself seriously. And yeah. Beer is supposed to be fun. It is not. There's a middle ground there with beer snobbery that is just that. And yeah, like I'm telling you this after I said we just dumped this shitty beer out at the garden.
That's respectable.
Bad off flavors. I don't have time for. I don't care if it's macro or craft. Like, there are some things that you should not taste in beer, but it's supposed to be fun. Yeah. It's supposed to be fun. And that rating system ties into that. It's fun. Yeah. This is the beer of the, or I'm sorry, this is the beverage of the people. It always has been, right? Like, it's beer, at the heart of beer is cheerfulness and fellowship and convivialism. Like, so that's in whatever, and I'm excited to hear about it, but whatever this is that you've concocted, it's in the spirit of beer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what you boys are drinking.
Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
Mostly Bergeron, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So what you boys are drinking right now is called What a Team. Exactly.
Fitting for the team we've got playing this.
So our friend Wade Tricky, big hockey guy, very good hockey player. He worked here, and he, you know, he was on Team Bissell Brothers, and you know, lots of hockey jokes and Furta, and you know, he'd always say "What a team" when we would win, It was for the Thompson's Point pond hockey tourney. Again, my COVID memory, I can't remember exactly what year this was. I think the pandemic was going on.
I don't even know
what
year it is now.
Yeah, right. So we did a small batch. And when I say small batch, I mean like five, like two barrels, like small, very, like minuscule for us, draft only of it, because we wanted to have it for the tourney, and we wanted to have it on tap over at the Bissell Beer Yurt. Yeah. Over the rink is suspended this year. I shouldn't say suspended, but the rink is paused this year here because they're going to build more infrastructure.
Oh yeah, I actually didn't know. We went a couple times last year.
It's going to be back bigger and better next year with like more like permanent like food and beverage shit and bleachers. It's going to be awesome. But anyways, Wade got sick with cancer. Flash forward, he's on the mend. I don't think he's quite out of the woods yet. I actually got to check in and see how that's going. But, you know, the second we heard the news, it was like, oh, my God, we got to do something. And it was a five-minute deliberation. We're like, we need to brew What a Team and send the proceeds to him just because, you know, cancer is cancer, and even if you're gonna get through it, it's gonna be some medical bills. So what the beer is, so that's kind of the backstory. It was put out. Team Bissell has changed colorways a few times after the new Beauty Unis jerseys, but the original jerseys are orange and blue, picked simply because it matched our goalies' pads. So our marketing manager Lucy, as she always does, knocked it out of the park with the design. Very kind of like sporty, collegiate looking blue. I think the cans have sold out, so I can't grab any, unfortunately. But this is designed after a beer like Budweiser. This is you would call an adjunct lager. An adjunct, again, sorry if I'm telling you guys something you know, but again, for the listeners, an adjunct in beer making means something that isn't one of the four main ingredients of beer. So water, yeast, malt, hops. So an adjunct, when you talk about Budweiser, is the fact that it ferments with rice and corn. Mm-hmm. Because to trigger the fermentation, as opposed to like four malted, it's cheaper. It's cheaper for a company like that that comes down to cost. But what it also does is, as we all know, you can crushability, you can slam even a Budweiser, even a heavy slams in a way that most craft beers don't, and it's because of that drinkability from the cheaper adjuncts used to trigger the fermentation. It's just it's lighter in body. You want to talk about Bud Light, I mean, like Bud Light's like water. We all know that. You know, you slam it.
That's a 37 drink of Bud.
Yeah. Oh, the top number's 37.
So, it's 37 scales.
Yeah, that's great.
As it should be.
How drinkable it is, 37's like water.
So, this is an adjunct lager. I think it's rice and corn. I'd have to check on that. But a little heavy on the hops. So there's a nice hoppy bite there. But, you know, it's it disappears like 5%, you know. So keeping in line with like a macro adjunct lager like Budweiser. It's definitely a little bit more hoppy. But that's the spirit of this beer. You know, it's a beer for activities, for playing pickup, for hanging out. Something that you can – it's not going to like – like you said, like it's not a motor oil stout that you can be seated in sweatpants to consume.
Next to a fireplace.
Yeah, it's a big like activity beer. So, and we love those beers here. You know, it's 5% with high drinkability is always nice.
I think that's kind of why I gravitate toward your beers, because it has that. And it's a nice mix of like, it drinks very easily, like you said, and it has a little more hoppiness, but not in the way, I feel like a lot of people immediately, or at least like people who aren't, like really in tune with beer, like equate hoppiness with IPAs and like, oh, it's gonna be bitter, it's gonna be hard to, and you can have a hoppy beer that's not bitter like that.
Oh,
that's what
this
does. It has the flavor of the hops, but it's not like, it's like hard to drink. It still keeps that light beer flavor or kind of vibe to it, which is really nice.
Another kind of in this grain, another one, we only do it once a year, it's called Dangle, and it's modeled after Bud Light Lime, one of my brother's favorites, and that's straight corn, and that comes out right around July 4th every year, and we hand zest the lime. So it is craft.
Sweet,
you know, we don't use, you know, essences or, you know, extracts or anything. No, we get a shitload of limes in here, and it's everyone's sideboard for a week to zest. The zesters are right in there. It's funny.
Zest the shit out of
them. And the whole place smells like lime. It's always right in the heat of summer, so it's always welcome, but another 5% total slammer, you know? You need it. You need to have those beers in the summer like that.
Absolutely. But, and that was kind of one of the things, right? You want to...
Well, I was going to review if you want to...
Yeah, no, review it up.
All right. So, I've been thinking about this the whole time. I haven't landed... So, tasteability, I'm going to go 33 because it's a Dana Char. And again, that's how strong the taste is. Taste is very, very good, but how strong it is out of 37. And then drinkability, I just want to go 28 because of Mark Recchi. So, I'm going to go with
Derek Forbort.
It's a scoreboard. Daryl Forsbrand. When they first got him, I was like, oh, that Daryl Forsbrand guy or whatever. And that stuck, especially with Schlosser.
Yeah. I'm going to go drinkability 30, tasteability 32. And we don't really do a quality score, but if there were, it would be a 37.
Very good.
Very good.
Brews and Bruins approved.
I don't think this is one of the few Abyssal Brothers beers that I don't think I've tried yet, actually.
So No, it's definitely... made in the spirit of hockey and fellowship, so I'm happy that it was on tap. Looking at the draft board, I was like, this is what we're starting.
It's the right one, absolutely. I do want to ask you, looking back at that draft board, obviously you have a hand in all these brews. Like, so you started with the Substance, which is kind of cool to know. I didn't know that came kind of before Bissell Brothers did.
That was the recipe that Noah was honing in on, and... you know, at the time, I was like, but this, even, you know, the stovetop versions, I was like, but this tastes crazy. Like, nothing like anything that was available. It was funny. So many people at the time, like in 2012, were like, oh, you better be careful. Like, the market's overcrowded. And it's so funny. In another 10 years, it's like quality always rises to the top. You know, there was a lot written about that. That was kind of like the media's like main angle for a few years. Hey, these guys all work together and they are... You know, by guys, I mean, like, you know, just everyone in the brewing industry at the time, like, they made a big deal for a while, it seemed, about just how the fact, like, oh, like, we give each other equipment and troubleshoot with each other. And, yeah, it's never really been, like, you're competing against yourself. There's a million and it was funny. I think we were the 35th. Yeah, because our state registration number is B35. So we're the 35th brewery in the state. In 2013, and there's like 100 now or more. I can't keep track. Back then, my ear was to the pavement. I knew everything going on in the state, in the industry, and now I have no idea. Yeah. All I know is like Bissell Brothers. Yeah. And just all I know is where that's obviously I learn about things opening up, but it's like I can't keep track. It's blown up. So it's like, well, there's obviously room for a lot more, you know, because opening a brewery, we grew bigger than I am. We're still not that big. We did about 11,000 barrels last year. 12,000 barrels, which is bigger than I ever thought we would get.
Yeah.
But we're still small compared to Allagash or Main Brewery.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which is crazy to think, because you guys all still get around.
In Mass before, yeah. We were in my hometown, Reading, Mass, before the Bruins game against Toronto. And do you remember, what the name of it was? There were two Bissell Bros.
I think they had
there.
Substance
It was
and
Substance,
else.
And I had whatever the other one was.
So it's funny, I've had a bunch of meetings about this in the last week or so. So Massachusetts has been really good to us.
Awesome.
There's a lot of people there that clearly want our beer and are drinking it because we are the number one placement for our distributor craft collective in 2002, I was told. We are on at Gillette Stadium every tap.
Yeah.
That was tremendous, and I got my eyes set on the garden next. But no, by and large, when we began growing to the point where, like, okay, we have beer that we need to move elsewhere.
Yeah.
We were hesitant to work with Mass. This is years ago, just based on the fact, like, okay, so many people from Massachusetts drive here. They're all through the tasting room, all through the weekend. We were worried that it would, like, I don't know, just impact that.
Diminish the business.
You know, like, were doing, and we still do a good amount of business. New York City loves us too, and that's, New York City is very good to us. We've got some great relationships down there, but at the time it was all New York. I was like, oh yeah, this is too far to drive.
Yeah.
Downtown Boston's 90 minutes away. Like, these people are driving up, you know, like, I don't want to necessarily, like, stop them from doing that. But it's all shaking out fine. Massachusetts has been an unbelievably great market for us. And we're still choosy. It's not just here, put this anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially on-premise, you know, we try to visit all our accounts. You know, we've got relationships with Row 34 was kind of like our first connection, just because Susie, the beer buyer there, is very much into the scene and very much a beer connoisseur herself. And the restaurant, it's not, I think they just started doing liquor, but it's mainly just been, it's a beer and seafood and oyster place.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like our first, and we're, you know, we've got a great relationship with Trillium. And you know, we kind of, obviously on different paths, and then being in the Boston market, you know, they've got all these locations, and there's just more people. But we started similar times. You know, we've kind of dovetailed with them. A couple of their top guys wanted to, I think they were happy in their jobs, but they just wanted the Maine life. They wanted to raise their families in Maine. So we got Paul Upham as our production manager, and his good friend Zach is the owner and operator and brewer of Bellflower. Best friends, both key brewers at Trillium, production managers, all that, and they but they wanted to live in Maine, so here they are. But we all have that history together, and JC at Trillium's a friend of mine. So Mass has been really good for us, and again, like, we didn't not want to do business, but we were just worried that it would, like, I don't know, destroy something, but
it feels like you probably did the opposite.
You could probably
the first time there, and they're like, oh, they're in Portland, we're going there anyway. Yeah. Let's go to kind of do that thing. But that's interesting that you mentioned that, though, because Chris, our third co-host, who could not be here because he's in San Diego,
he's not dedicated enough.
He didn't want to fly out for some reason. I told him he'd get a couple free beers, but he wanted to ask you about, like, whether that kind of relationship with other breweries was collaborative, competitive, somewhere in between. But it seems like it skews almost entirely toward the collaborative side, which is the sense that I've gotten from, I know you have, like, the Maine Brewers Guild or whatever, like, there's all these kind of associations and stuff.
You know, it's, I'm a competitive person, and I really want to, I'd like to think, anyway, I'm always pushing myself and the team to reach further, but that's not, we're competing with ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like Coke, Pepsi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, these aren't two, there's no, like, other. You know, like and not to get too nerdy with economics and finance, which I am a nerd with. Like, so the concept of the long tail in economics is like, okay, you have, you know, like legacy mega brands, Dodge or Ford, Chevy, Coke, Pepsi, Apple, IBM, these like giants that we think of that up until relatively very recently, like, okay, like it's Coke or Pepsi, there's no other choice. But really the long tail, if you look at a graph, like here's Coke, here's Pepsi, these two kind of compete with each other. They do like, what's the word I'm looking for? Anti-competitive shit, rather than focusing on making their own product better. When you get to that monolithic point, that status, you have to like work at like detracting from the other.
It's the
right?
Democrat Republican politics.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah. So, so on a graph, you have these two big front ones, and then or a receding tail of smaller and smaller pies.
Yeah,
and that represents the long tail. But really, all of those together represent a bigger share than, you know, A and B.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you could call it like the fragmentation of commerce. But now in 2023, I mean, that's most things. Mm-hmm. Most businesses and industries have splintered into a million little different things. And the really cool thing about that is that you can, it's like embracing weirdness. It's embracing individual, like nicheness, you know, like you see it all the time in beer, certainly in restaurants. You get, you know, 30 years ago, it was just the American Bar and Grill, right? Mm-hmm. A menu with like 40 items, everything under the sun, like all mediocre. But that was how things worked at the time. Now you've got the most niche restaurant concepts possible, and they find their customers, and the customers love them, and they tell their friends, the people in their spheres of influence that, like, you know, all right, you went to a, I trust your opinion. You went out to eat somewhere that and had a great time, and you and I are the same, right? Like, we know each other's wavelength, and you say, hey, I just went to X restaurant. Like, fuck, it was so good. Like, you have to get Y, this X dish. Like, okay, that you just did the most effective type of marketing that any business can ever hope for. Mm-hmm. It's not putting an ad in the paper. It's not trying to one-up, like, come on down to Bissell Brothers. We're better than Maine Beer Company. You know, like, that stuff doesn't really happen anymore. Like, if someone did that, they'd just be laughed at by everyone, right?
Including,
like,
consumers at this point.
Yeah. Like, so there really is no, like, there's no one, like, this sounds kind of silly, but it's like there's no brewery that I'm like, oh, we need to like take these guys down. Yeah. You know, there's none of that. So it is
beat their hockey team.
It is super collaborative in that regard. That being said, like we collaborated, and I was like out in the scene a lot more in years past.
Yeah.
You know, like as the business grows and as I grow, like I have a family, I have another business. These things all require attention.
Yeah.
So I unfortunately don't, I'm not out on the scene as much as I was when I was younger.
Yeah.
Because I'm really ultimately only focused on Bissell Brothers and High Roller, of course, but just for, you know, the purpose of this kind of, you know, like I don't have the time to just go hang out in tap rooms as much anymore. I still get there and I still have friends in the industry. And God, we were just down in Asheville, North Carolina. I finally saw my buddy Vince's brewery Dissolver in Asheville, and it was so fucking awesome. So I still get out there, but God, back in the early days, I was out every night.
Yeah.
You know, I was on the streets, you know, getting the word, like I knew what was up. I knew all the players.
Consumer research.
Yeah. So, but we still collab. You know, we are collaborating with Bellflower and Milo. We have a Forest and Maine collab. I think that's come out down in Pennsylvania already. What else is on the docket for collabs? We're collaborating with Schilling, a great lager producer in New Hampshire. They do a wonderful job, and we know them. They're great people. So we're still doing it, but it's just a little bit more formulaic now.
Yeah.
A lot of the work is done ahead of time. But it is important. We have friends overseas. We've collaborated with Northern Monk in Leeds, England a lot. We got to get back over. That was all pre-pandemic. We got to get back over there.
Tyler Adams.
But by and large, there's no one's big enough, you know, to, that's for these big breweries that you read about. Like, it's not a life that I would want to have. You know, it's two things can be true at once. Like, we are very competitive, but it's with ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some times when I go on a tear and I'm looking around here, I feel like all I see are problems to be solved. Like, yeah. Fuck, like, man, we need to do this. What are we doing? It's never like, oh my God, we need to curtail main beer company's distribution.
Yeah. It's like playing golf with your buddies, right? Like, it's competitive, but you want to beat your own score. You don't care how the guy next to you is.
Yeah.
Like, you want to beat whatever you did last week or yesterday.
Yeah, it's very inward looking. Yeah. But I don't know, like, sometimes people in the industry will be like, hey, we were really inspired by you. You, meaning Bissell Brothers, doing this or that. And what are you still doing here?
Working.
Oh, my dude.
Back season.
Oh, my God.
Can I jump in the pod?
Wow. So that's Jared, our CFO, burning the midnight oil, as it were. That was so crazy to see him walk in here. I got to find
that
out.
That was genuine shock.
Yeah, yeah.
That was not rehearsed for me, but...
Working, it's tax season.
Like you said, there's a lot of moving parts going on here.
Yeah.
As much as we love the tap room, there's more going on.
Yeah, right, I'm sure. But it's been great because it keeps me learning, you know?
Yeah.
I think the most dangerous thing with all this stuff is to get to a point where you think that you know everything that you need to know. And that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, again, I look at, like, some of the things that I'm focused on now and, you know, we've got a few deals in the works, and again, I want to get into the garden and make it happen.
Yeah.
You're wearing the sweet Pasternak Winter Classic sweater.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can tell you want to get into the garden.
Well, it's funny, you know, I had a marketing meeting today with the marketing team, and we were talking about open-ended questions and, you know, like, just talking about the stuff that we do in these meetings, you know, like, what... That dopamine release, you know, we sell elective. Nothing, we're not a gas company, you know, like, this isn't... We're not utilities. Like, this is all elective stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, this, no one needs anything that we're selling.
You're right.
But you know, how that dopamine release, when we were talking about how important it is to make sure that we exceed all expectations with the products, the merch, the experience.
Yeah.
The time of coming to Bissell Brothers, it should feel exciting. And this time of year, I do a lot of buying. After the holidays, I like buy new underwear and socks. I usually buy a new bathing suit. We'll switch up the art in the house. Like, so not anything crazy, but like my wife and I will buy shit that, okay, like, it's time to reset. It's a new year. Let's go through our clothes, take what we're not wearing to go. You know, we're not like straight Marie Kondo with this, but like everything in our house is used. We have shit. We're not like minimalists, but like
I have so much shit laying around.
We audit everything that we own, usually in January, and like, but we also buy new stuff too, and then you get those dopamine hits, and it's cool. But to running a business, you have to think about it a little bit more. And I brought this jersey up in the meeting. We're at the game. I was supposed to go to the Winter Classic. We had tickets. My buddy Trev, his stepfather works for Nissan and gets tickets. And he was like, "We have four. Like, do you and Vanessa want to come?" And I was like, "Fuck yeah, this is sick." So I lined up. My father and his wife were going to babysit. I was like, "This is great," but he only ended up getting two. Again, no one's fault. It was a corporate thing. A lot of hands were in the pot.
It's Nissan's fault.
A lot of hands were in the pot. So I was like, fuck. So, but I knew that we had, like, the next weekend, like, the Leafs game. So I was like, whatever, but I'm getting a Winter Classic jersey. So we get in to the pro shop, and I was like, I hope they have them. And they did. And I got one, and I mean, it's like $220, you know. It's like, for a piece of clothing, like, it's pretty pricey, but it, like, the felt, like, this is, like, timeless.
They're sweet.
They're so sick.
It's like, you can wear it or you can hang it on your wall.
And then they came out, and I knew that they were going to wear the classics at least one more time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, boys, like, look, they look so sharp. And it's like, this was so validated.
Yeah.
And then I would take the kids skating at that new municipal rink in Cape.
Yeah.
They did a killer job with it.
Yeah.
We were over in Sopar, and it's like 10 minutes down the road, really, from us. So we were there like three times this past weekend. I'm wearing this. And they're good. Like, there's like one section for like stick and puck practice. People, you can just fuck around with the puck.
Yeah.
And then the first section is open skate. the middle section is like stick and puck, but no games. You just like work on skills and shit.
Whatever, yeah.
And the furthest one is like just pick up. So you can it's loose. A lot of places are strict, you know. Like, but like you can fuck around with a stick and puck there. So I had this on and like, it felt fucking awesome. And I was getting compliments. I was like, man, this I'm looking for any excuse to wear this jersey. So the expectations fully like match reality, you know. And like it's oftentimes it doesn't. We all know. When that happens, when you're let down by a purchase or an experience, it sucks.
Yeah.
And with all the options that we have available right now, it can sometimes mean like, okay, that customer's not coming back.
Yeah.
They might not say fuck you on the way out, but they're going to vote with their dollars and their time. Yeah. The two things that are most precious to everybody. And I can't believe there's no goal yet. That's crazy. How are the Habs doing here, this? Yeah.
I know. It's.
This
is their Stanley Cup.
This jersey is sick, and it's awesome. Yeah.
Okay. So let's circle back in on beer for a sec.
Yeah. You guys look a little dry here.
What is your own? Yeah. Maybe we should refill, and then I'll pause this quick.
While the previous versions of ourselves get a new pour, I'm going to give you a quick reminder from DraftKings. Four NFL teams, two conference championship games, and only a few more shots to win big on the playoffs with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Counting down to Super Bowl 57, new customers can bet just $5 and get 200 in free bets instantly. If you're not a new customer, you can feel the conference championship thrills and sweat. With stepped-up same-game parlays, take your shot at an even bigger NFL payout and boost your winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. New customers can bet just $5 on conference championships and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code TBPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
All right, so we've poured a couple more beers here after a quick pause for DraftKings.
Yeah, probably. You guys were. Yeah.
DraftKings ad read happened.
Just imagine you had to suffer through Drew trying to read a DraftKings ad, which is always entertaining.
You guys read your own ads?
Oh, God.
We
freestyle them too, usually. It's a good time.
Oh, God.
Or at least partially, but.
I queued up. I was mainly listening to the content just to get a feel for how I was going, but I didn't get that. No, it's great. I just didn't hear any ads at the snippets I listened
There's
to.
There's also potentially...
I love like some of the comedy podcasts I listen to. Like, fuck. They when they read them, like Theo Vaughn is so funny when he reads his ads. And Shane Gillis and Matt McCusker. Oh, my God. Yep. That
feel the sweat. They give us a script. Like as like a sample, and there's like bolded things in there. You have to say like whatever their promotion is this week. Like, oh, you get $100 in free bets.
Do you want to see how fast you can lose $300? DraftKings.
Go to DraftKings.
Oh, dude, I'm telling you. So after the game Saturday, so we're back at Encore. We're feeling it. A little high, a little drunk, and we had played a little blackjack prior. We had dinner at Encore. The unbelievable steak, man. It was. So nice. But anyway, so we're back down there, and the antes get raised. Or is that even... I barely gamble, but blackjack's fun. We're playing like $15 before.
Yeah.
And we made some money. The tables were hot, so we're like feeling it. And I'll preface this. We ended the night up. We won it back, but I had like a $500 chip. And I was like, boys, like we walked by a $100 table. And I was like, let's just split this up, 125 each, and let's go. We're kind of on a streak. Sat down. The dealer hit blackjack, and it was gone. It was like 10 seconds. Yeah. It was 10 seconds. And I was like, what? I've never seen 500 vanish that fast. We're down, but we won it all back.
It was experience at Oxford Casino this summer. I was like, me and my buddy, he's up from New Jersey. He was like, you got any casinos nearby? I was like, I think there's one in Oxford. Like, fucking move.
Ooh, yeah.
Sat down, it's like $15 mins. We're up like $40. I'm like, fuck it. I'll be here for a little bit. Yeah. 20 minutes later, I'm out.
Gone. Like, it happened. Like, life comes at you fast at the tables.
Yeah, no, it's fun, though.
But you guys were dry, so we couldn't have that. So you guys have two very different beers, and I always like drinking different beers back to back because the flavor. Again, we talked earlier about how beer is so subjective. Like, so much of it influences. Like, if you're drinking multiple beers, it's going to be a crazy different experience.
Yeah,
as opposed to just sessioning one beer. So what you're starting off with right now is called Cone, KOAN. A cone is like a Buddhist. It's like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Mm-hmm. That's like probably the most famous cone. Cohen.
Something like that. You know
that. So we have a fooder out there, which is actually going to go away soon.
Oh my God, the Bruins are losing to the Canadiens. It's going to change. It's going to change.
Brutal.
This is
brutal.
Part of the storyline.
I just hit myself in the head. I was so angry. I don't know if you saw that, but I regret that.
Wow.
Well, by the time the listeners are hearing, they're going to know what's going to happen here. They'll see the comeback. It's all right.
I have found it very comical who we've chosen to lose to.
Yes.
I think it bodes well for the postseason, but it's like our losses, our regulation losses this year are hilarious.
Oh, laughable, yeah.
So you know what? We'll see. We'll see. But
at least it was power play, so it's like we can blame it on we were short.
Bad bounce.
Yeah.
It was a short man. Off a skate. Sway couldn't get over it.
Sway did what he could from the looks of it. But so Cohn is a Fooder-aged Keller beer lager. Mm-hmm. So this is inspired by Marsbrau in Bamberg, Germany, another brewery that my brother and father and I have been to together. And the cool thing about Germany is that different cities pretty much are known for one style of beer, and that's what they make.
Yeah.
So Bamberg is actually known for Rausch beer. The brewery is called Schlenkerla. And man, so Rausch beer is smoked beer. Mm-hmm. So it's like think like liquid bacon.
Yeah.
You know? So we went to Schlenkerla, and this is like some hereditary shit. You know, there's like black goat's heads over the door, and there's this like a beer wench, this witch that opens the window, like, what you want? and most places have most places have like two or three beers on. I know it's like I'm being stereotypical, but like this place, it was cool. It was a great experience, but it was like no one was like mean, but it was like it was
hard.
You felt like you were in like a horror movie, and there was this like bigger kind of open room, but it was like quiet. Like a lot of these places don't play background music, and like you get the sense of like other tables are like looking at you, and it's like
Americans.
Not even that. It was just like, man, like is this like some like freaky like horror movie shit? Like, but they are famous for their Rausch beer, and it was the best Rausch beer I've ever had. But Marsbrau is also in Bamberg. Mm-hmm. Similar thing, like only a couple beers on, but there it's called Underspugget. And it means like unfiltered, and it's this Keller beer. And again, Germany is very particular about beer styles and different. You know, you just this is how you do it, and there's no other way. If you're in Dusseldorf, it's alt beer. If you're down in Munich, it's Oktoberfest and those types of lagers. And then Cologne is Kolsch, of course. But it was really delicious, like for a lager. Again, you guys talk about drinkability, like it's so drinkable, but there's a body to it. There's a heft to it that does not impede the drinkability. So no one wanted to riff on it. So this is aged in, I believe I should know some of these, but I don't think this ferments in the fooder. I think it's fermented in stainless, but then transferred in. Yeah, it's fooder aged. So it's lager yeast. It has that drinkability, but there's a heft to it. There's a robustness from the time in wood, and it's really really nice. This is the second batch of it, I want to say. It's a great addition to the portfolio.
Tastability 37.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing I noticed, I like to sniff beers, which is maybe weird. You probably don't think
he does
weird.
It right
no,
into
no,
the
no, no, no.
He does it right into the mic. Right sometimes. Into the
well, it's going to be cognizant of it because sound. The smell and the aroma is going to impact the taste.
Yeah,
they are linked, and it's not. It's all subconscious, but like that. You know, coming in, that's part of the sensation of taste. You should be smelling them.
Like you can smell the fruitiness. It smells sweeter.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you get that a bit in the taste, but it still has that it doesn't taste like a sour or something, or like a very like fruit heavy beer. But it's got kind of that aroma, which I really like. Which and like you said, it's got the lightness still, kind of like the last one. But like I feel like some people have this impression of like why drink craft beer if it's gonna be a 5%er that's light.
Yeah.
They can't appreciate, but it's like this is so much different than a Bud Light or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Like it has that light body to it, but there's still so much more flavor in that light body.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's incredible. The product is
and that's insane. 5.5 I think, Yeah, it's fun. And again, like all the lagers, craft lager, when done well, you get a big, robust taste, but yeah. It's still like you drink it right down.
Yeah, this one's definitely, I would say, less hoppy than the last one. Kind of more of I call a rounded flavor. I don't know if that's like a term, but that's what comes to mind for me. It's
tastes
not very
like
sharp
a circle.
On the tongue, right? It's like, it doesn't hit you with that like hard hop. It's very smooth.
Descriptors like that, like, are you guys familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk at all?
No.
He's like a big social media guy. I think, did he buy the... His lifelong dream was to like buy the New York Jets. He's a big entrepreneur guy.
That sucks.
But he got a start in the wine world.
Yeah.
I think he was like... his parents were immigrants from somewhere in Eastern Europe. And he got a start in the wine world, and he started doing this thing called, he was like an early YouTube like proponent.
Yeah.
And he would do these wine reviews. It was called Wine Library TV. And he talks like a New Yorker. He's not like the opposite of what people think of as like a sommelier. And he would use descriptors like, oh, like he had like a Jets helmet like spit bucket when he was doing these like tastings. Yeah. And he would be like, oh, this tastes like bubblegum that was like pulled off the bottom of a table, not necessarily meaning it negatively.
Yeah.
He would use whatever came to his mind. And I've always thought about that. Like, yeah, there's beer, you're drinking it, it's in your mouth, it's in your brain. Like, it's up to you to describe what that tastes like.
Yeah.
So I'm always open.
I'm glad, because I feel like a maniac sometimes around the pod, and I'm like, this beer tastes like, I said, round. Like, what does round taste like? But like, what's the first thing that comes to my head of a lot of beers when it like has that full-bodied flavor.
Yeah, so Enchanted Forest over there, that mixed fermentation saison, that beer has hand-foraged Maine spruce tips in it that my brother and father collect from up north. And to me, spruce tip beers, Banded Horn does a great one called Green Warden. These beers all, like, spruce tip in a beer, to me, it's Skittles.
Yeah.
And some people that are, you know, more kind of... you know, BJCP, Cicerone leaning, like, would scoff at some of these descriptors, like, because it's, you know, some people want things in a certain rigid playbook, to each their own. Good on you. That's why we don't really...
I feel like that's not the point.
We don't play in that world much. Like,
yeah.
To me, it tastes like Skittles.
Yeah.
And it's a tree branch, but it's what I taste, and other people have confirmed, you know, it tastes candy fruity, and it's... That's what I get, and I'm not crazy, and that's the taste.
I'm glad you said that too, because when I first moved to Maine and I like really started investing in the craft beer scene, I would go down to Bow Street Beverage.
Yeah.
And they have that huge fucking craft beer wall.
Yeah.
And I would always say to my friends, my brother, I'm like, I feel like I'm in a candy shop, because they have all these amazing beers, and of course, like, the labeling and stuff, and all the canning is all like bright. It feels like you're in a candy shop again as a kid.
Yeah.
And I equate it to like, yeah, I still drink the Miller Lights and stuff, right? But, like, you don't always... Like, you want to sometimes go out and get yourself something that's special, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And going out to get craft beer is like candy shopping. It's like, what am I going to get that's, like, going to give me that dopamine rush that you're talking about, right?
100%.
What's
going to
give you that?
Yeah, there's this place in Bridgeton, too, I just want to shout out. Gastropub. They have a big wall.
Yeah, we went there, actually.
Oh, my God, My man, Will. Like, that place is great. That place is great.
They're awesome.
And that was a convenience store. Mm-hmm. And a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pumps were in until relatively recently.
They took them out
right
before the pandemic.
Yeah.
But
that wall in there, they've got some great picks, and it's like, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool because they kept that, even though it's an on-premise restaurant. That's their beer selection for on-premise, in glass. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I love
that. They also have the local sodas and stuff, too.
Yeah.
They're not drinking.
Yeah. Right, but the experience, you know, like these little tales that you boys are alluding to right now, like, it's so important. And I think anybody that has gone down any sort of path in craft beer has these. I think back, we went, so me, Noah, and Seth were going to get this going. You know, Seth was our first employee. He went to Farmington with Noah. He was very, they worked at this place called Ron's Market in Farmington, another like hole in the wall, like general store type place with crazy craft beer. You know, like, I love those places. That the 7-Eleven in Kittery was another one. Like, it's a 7-Eleven, but whoever's managing this shit was into craft beer because.
Yeah, they got it.
In summer of 2012, summer of 2013, we had like secured the financing. We financed the brewery through a mix of private investment and a bank loan, which we didn't have any assets at the time. So we like we raised the money first, and that was a whole, that was like an applied MBA to do all that. Like, it was, again, you talk about that time, like, I learned more in those 2 years than I think any other period in my life.
Yeah.
And then we were able to, once we had raised that, we were able to leverage that into the bank loan. And it was all said and done. We were celebrating, like, okay, like, it was also, like, nerve-wracking, like, okay, we need to do this now.
Yeah.
But the three of us took a trip to Waterbury, Vermont to celebrate. And if you don't know, Waterbury, Vermont is the home, well, it's there in Stowe now, but it was the founding home of the Alchemists, mm-hmm. which produces Hetty Topper, mm-hmm. One of the first, like, white whale things. And their story is crazy. It was, the Alchemist was first a brew pub in downtown Waterbury. Waterbury is like the size of Milo.
Yes.
But they have a couple like world-class beer bars. Vermont's just different like that. The wealth and culture is like spread out throughout the state.
The one New England state, for some reason, I've never been. And I'm like a big ski.
It's number two. It's number two.
That's good. That's good. Because you have that to look forward to.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah. I have it to look forward to.
So
I'm going to start telling people that when they're shocked I haven't been there.
Burlington, city.
So the Alchemist started as this brew pub on like the little main strip there. And then I can't remember the name of the storm, but it was, I think, in 2011. It was one of these weird storms where Vermont got flooded. It was a hurricane that, like, you know, mostly
Sandy?
It affects the lower... it might have been.
I remember because of New York, where I grew up, got hit, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they got smoked, and, like, their brew pub was in, like, 4 or 5 feet of water.
Damn.
And they got it figured out, but they pivoted... And they had Hetty Topper as a beer, but they pivoted, and John Kimmick, the owner founder guy, was like, we're gonna can this, mm-hmm. and they pivoted to 16-ounce cans, and it just blew up. And back then, I had had can people had, you know, this was like big white whale stuff. I had had them, and at the time there was nothing. It still is a very distinct mm-hmm. beer. It's a wonderful beer, but again, you look back 10 years, it's like, okay, there was nothing. Nothing that tasted even close to this.
Yeah.
And we went, and I remember, and now what used to be the Alchemist, the brew pub, is now a gastro pub called the Prohibition Pig. Again, worth the drive. It inspired the food. It just like really good beer food, decadent stuff, you know, like really over the top, smoked meat and comfort food. My mouth's watering.
Sounds amazing.
And again, like Waterbury is this tiny little strip, but there's the Pump House, I think, is the other place. Blackback, which is like a fly fishing reference. Mm-hmm. And he moved, Rick Benet, the owner of that, moved to Portland and opened King's Head and then Mash Tun. So that's the guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But all these, you know. Hill Farmstead, all this stuff that at the time was like, there's nothing like it anywhere on... There we go. Hey! There we go.
Taylor Hall is a Boston Bruin.
There we go.
I love how we all noticed on the replay, not the actual.
come on.
There we go. The tie game.
1-1.
It took being down.
He needs
1-0 to the Habs.
He needs it. He's been a little slow lately.
He's been streaky, but he is a Boston Bruin, and shouts to him being involved in our charity somewhat.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true, yeah. Shouts to David K. Johnson Foundation.
But just we went to the Alchemist, and like, which is now like a cannery. There wasn't really a tap room. It was there because people were lining up. Like, you were there to get beer. And there's one hotel in Waterbury, the Best Western. Whenever you go there, you see a bunch of craft beer nerds. Like, it's on the trail. You know, like, you can just tell by the cars in the parking lot and like the pack tacks littered around. Yeah. Like, so. We walk into the Alchemist, and we heard, like, I remember the smell. I don't smell this brewery. If I travel, if I'm on the road, I come back, I smell the grain a little bit. Yeah. I smell other breweries, which is weird, but, like, I don't smell this one anymore. But walking into the Alchemist, it was like a wave of hot, tropical, like, hot, just bam.
Yeah.
And I heard the clink, clink, clink of the lids landing.
Yeah.
It was all so fucking magical. Yeah. It was, I was like, we're here. You know, like, beer tourism is so fucking special. And I, again, like, it you do get jaded with time. I've been to a million breweries. Like, we're doing it, you know, like, I've it's different now, but I will never forget those formative, like, first big experiences, like, excuse me, that. And I remember, like, we saw John, a man I would later come to know, and, like, we brought our company there and, like, toured around their brewery and, like, hung out with them. But at the time, we saw him, like, we were looking back, like, into the brewery from, like, the public area. There was, like, a knee wall.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, there's Gimmick. Like, there's, oh, my God. Like, totally.
Superstar. Totally. So how we felt walking through the back of the brewery.
Yeah. We're
like, holy shit. We're looking at things from, like, on the top. Like, damn, this is, like, sick. Like,
totally geeking out at just the smell.
And
just,
yeah.
And I got the case. And we went back to the Best Western. And fucking filled the sink up with ice and, like, set that shit in. And it was, like, so special and so fun. And, like, as it gets bigger and, like, I'm, you know, I work with the guy that just walked through here. You know, we're doing more high-level stuff. I always think back to those because you can never lose touch with, like, what the fuck are we all here for? Like, it was experiences like that. Like, so, yeah, like, just hearing, like, the beer, like, cherish those. And, yeah, you've got, if you've never been to Vermont, all that shit awaits you, you know.
Yeah,
or Milo. I would like to think that we've created Milo is like
I've never been.
There's
there,
funky like cheddar, you know, like you smell like the wild yeast and the bacteria. It's different, but it's awesome. And again, like I can't experience it the way that I experience that, but I know that some people are getting that. It's just such a fun thing. It's really cool, like to get on the road with friends and drive somewhere to taste a beverage, and then when you finally do it, and as I said before, when it expectation meets or exceeds reality, or when reality meets or exceeds expectation, you've got a fucking great thing, you know. It's awesome.
It is awesome to, like, because I feel like especially in Maine and in the craft beer scene, which like Maine is especially known for, you think like you drink these beers and you kind of imagine that like that vibe of community and of shared experience and things like that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's awesome to like, and as, even coming here, like in the past as just a regular old customer, that's always the vibe I've gotten, right? But you never really know, like as the, just the, you know what I mean, have the beer or whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess if you experience it enough, you might, but like you imagine the people who run it having those same values, right? And it's always, you know what I mean? Like I have always bought into the idea, especially in Maine, and that camaraderie that you've talked about, that that's a shared experience, right?
Yeah.
But, like, it's hard to, like, go in and you're buying a beer or whatever, and, like, you want to imagine that that's really the case behind the scenes, and it's just awesome to hear that that is the case, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, like, that you guys care as much about the experience that people have coming into here or going up to Milo or whatever else versus just, are they going to buy our beer? You know what I mean?
And that's, one time you let my girlfriend just use the bathroom without being...
Exactly. So really? Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe she faked it. But we were at a concert at Thompson's Point. She was like,
"Oh, of course."
Need to
yeah.
Oh, I was there. Was that the one I was there for you with?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Rigatronics or whatever the fuck there.
Rigometrics and whatever.
Yes.
There was a bunch of plays.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. So I want to talk about this second beer we're having in a sec. I'm gonna do two rapid fires first.
Yeah, let's go.
What is your personal favorite Bissell Brothers beer?
Jeez.
And alternatively, if that's too hard of a question, what is, do you feel, the most unique beer that you've ever made here?
Okay. All right. So it's rapid fire, so I shouldn't think too much
you
about
this. You
can
think this a little bit. We can edit it and make it
sound. Boy, you know, like...
Another ad for DraftKings.
You know, there's beers I find myself drinking, and that changes over the years. Like, I can't... I have to say Substance. It has given us everything else.
Yeah.
This is a business, you know. Ideals are important. They kind of like help forge your path, like, you know, like holding these kind of memories that we're talking about. Like, this is a business. Substance has given us everything. It's given us the ability to make the beer better.
You can't create
those
experiences
to invest, to get
clothes.
The best people, to get the best equipment. You need those things, and you know, the beer was one of a kind, but it was partially serendipity. It was a timing thing. Like, someone was going to do a beer like this at some point, but we saw this hole in the market that no one else really saw, and the timing just worked out. Someone could have conceived of the Substance now and done it, and it still would be a very good beer if they had ended up with this product that we have now, but like the timing, the it was wide open for this, and it's given us everything. You know, it's given us the ability to grow and invest and reinvest for so many years into better equipment, better people, better practices, So I can't. It has to be substance, and I don't drink it much. But when I crack one, and it's the best it's ever been. With how we're brewing it, and the number of times people like Seth that just stepped in there have brewed this beer, and they know this beer inside and out.
Yeah.
They know every nook and cranny of this beer's essence. With our QC program in the lab upstairs, and our salespeople and like their diligence with like, hey, you know, like checking dates, making sure that everyone's getting proper fresh beer, it is just awesome. So I almost by choice like don't have it much, because when I crack one, it's like, this is so good.
If Christmas were every day, it wouldn't be Christmas.
Yeah.
Same thing with the substance. I feel that's awesome.
Good reason, too.
Yeah, I love that. Substance has to be my favorite Bissell beer. It really is. And then the second question.
Most unique. And I don't know. That's a tough one, I'm sure, because like you said, the whole draw inspiration.
We've done some weird shit.
Or if you want to throw out a few, that's fine. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm always interested.
We did a beer this summer. So we have another beer program here called Something of Ourselves. It's all female designed, brewed, marketed. So it's all the girls get together, and it's each Something of Ourselves is different.
Mm-hmm.
It's their whim. It's like kind of what they want to kind of see through. Awesome. And we did one this summer, and it was kettle soured, which we usually don't do. And it was it had thyme and raspberry in it.
Ooh.
And it was so unique. I still have a few cans at home. It was one of the most unique beers we've ever put out, but it worked. It was it was pomegranate and thyme. But thyme, it was like a cooking ingredient. You did not see it in beer a lot, but it was just, it was subtle, but it was there, and it was a truly unique beverage.
Yeah.
That combined with the fact that it was kettle soured, it was very unique. Or no, Something of Ourselves, Viggs. The Something of Ourselves this summer wasn't kettle soured, was it?
Started as a rice lager, Hannah did.
No, the one with thyme and pomegranate.
That was a You Earned It.
Right, but that was like that new yeast that like...
Yes.
Put, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's this new yeast that
oh, really?
you don't need to keep the kettle going all through the weekend. Yeah, and it brings out the lactic acid in it.
Wow.
And it was super tart. It was tart as fuck.
I love that. Yeah. I'm like a... Warheads were like my favorite candy growing up. I don't know if you've ever had one of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
like,
yeah, this was on
hurt
that
your
level.
Face. Yeah, I love like true sour beers.
Yeah.
So that's right down my alley.
Thanks,
that's
Dave.
Awesome.
I would say that was one of the most unique beers.
They also have a specific yeast strain that makes...
Oh, is that right?
Oh, really?
No kidding.
Nice.
The industry continues to evolve.
It always changes, right?
Thanks for listening to part one of our interview with Peter Bissell of Bissell Brothers Brewing. You can find them at Thompson's Point in Portland. You can also find them on Twitter at Bissell Bros Brew, and you can find Peter on Twitter at PJensenBissell. We've got part two coming out from our interview with Peter, including the rest of the Bruins game that we were recording during. Comeback win complete, as I said. And we'll have some more bees talk and some more beer talk coming up with Pete in just a little bit. So keep an eye on the pod feed and on our website, brewsandbruins.com. Part two will be posted there early next week. See you then. Cheers.